Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast series. If you're an educator interested in how coaching can have a significant impact on you and your team, you have come to the right place. Through our Stories from the Field episodes, we gain valuable insights into the do's and don'ts of implementing a coaching culture in schools. So please join me over the next two episodes as I find out about coaching at Westminster School in Adelaide in South Australia. And to kick things off in this first episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Westminster School's Director of Teaching, Angela Phillips. Angela, it's a real pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You are very, very welcome. Okay, so for the benefit of our listeners, Angela, maybe I could start if you would share with us a little of your journey in education so far, and maybe a brief overview of your current role at Westminster School.
Absolutely. So I started teaching in the UK. So I started my career in Bradford at a school called Queensborough School, which is a very different situation to what I'm in now at Westminster.
Okay.
So Westminster is a high fee paying school, independent school in Adelaide, where when I started my career, I worked at Queensborough, which was a school that went into special measures, which for the people from the UK, that means inspectors have come and told you that you're not very good and you need to make some changes. So that's where I started, and I became an advanced skills teacher in the UK. And I absolutely loved every minute of it. But in 2012, my family and I, we migrated to Australia, and I got offered the job at Westminster, which was... it was a massive culture shock for me. So going from a really tough school to a high fee paying independent school, it was not something that I sort of envisaged for my career. And it was a little bit of a culture shock. I worked part time because my children were little, and we didn't have any friends. So getting myself sorted, you know, really important things. And then as my children got a little bit older, I became the head of maths at Westminster. And then later I became the pedagogy coach in 2019, followed by the head of pedagogy and digital delivery. And now I'm the director of teaching. So my role has sort of morphed over. It's morphed over the years since I've been there. I've been there 11 years. So this is the first year that I'm the director of teaching, and I'm, again, loving every minute of it. I feel really fortunate in my career that I've come from one school that I just loved to another school that I love equally.
Fantastic. And as you say, Angela, two unbelievably different contexts to work within. But imagine, you know, the grounding, and I'll use the word grounding, that you got in your first school, I'm sure has served you well, both there, but also in the post at Westminster. Angela, one of your current responsibilities at Westminster is leading coaching at West. Can you tell us a bit about what or maybe who originally inspired you to get into coaching?
Absolutely. Now, I worked with one of the best educators that I've ever come across, called Teresa Batty, when I was at Queensborough School. And she has been one of the most influential people on my career. And she was just an amazing educator, but she really listened to other people. And she actually saw something in me, but she also saw something in me that I'm not particularly good at listening. So back along, I'm a fixer, so I wanted to make everything right, and I wanted to wave a magic wand and go, oh, I knew what people needed to do, but I wanted to tell them rather than work with them. So Teresa got me onto a coaching course back in the UK, early 2000s. I worked with one of the other advanced skills teacher in the UK, and we would coach each other and then we'd coach different people. And it completely changed the way that I interacted with all my colleagues, but even with my family members. And my husband would say to me, stop doing that coaching thing on me. So that the power of coaching, making him think it was his own idea with all these different things. Oh, we're going to renovate the bathroom. And it would, and then he'd go, oh my goodness, he said, you're so clever. It was like that coaching voodoo. So that was really the start of it. So, but it wasn't any formal training. It was just some like ad hoc training that we'd got.
Yeah.
but it really ignited my passion for coaching and seeing the power of people taking responsibility and solving their own problems and how much more ownership they had of that and how it just made such a difference to the longevity of changes that people made in the classroom.
Fantastic. And it's interesting, I noted a couple of things down there. So obviously Teresa, you know, quite an inspiration at the start, and a key thing she did well was she listened really well. It's lovely to see, you know, you're saying that because of that training, and even on an ad hoc basis, it changed the way I interacted with people. You know, and that's what we're about in coaching is you know, improving the conversations that we have, enhancing the conversations we have with other people. Yes, in the workplace, but also, as you say, you know, beyond, I talk about beyond the bell. When we're at home at the weekends and in all of those other relationships, it can have a really positive impact. Angela, whenever I scroll through the Westminster School website, I can see clearly coaching plays a significant role in teacher professional development. So can you share with us something of the coaching journey Westminster has been on to get to where it is today?
Yes, absolutely. Now, in 2019, I was appointed as the pedagogy coach at Westminster School, and that was the brainchild of Simon Shepherd, who was our new principal at the time. He's still our principal, and again, an amazing educator and really forward-thinking, and there wasn't such a thing in South Australia. So I was the first one, and I think because I'd been the head of maths, I had the reputation, everybody had seen the changes that had happened in maths. So I had quite a positive reputation within school. The students liked me and I did great things in the classroom and the kids would be talking about me. So I had that reputation, and Simon identified that it was really important that if you start in a role like that, you've got to have somebody in school that's well respected for the job that they're currently doing, and that people have some trust in. So I think that was the start of it. Simon was great and he said, tell me what you need. And I said, I've not actually done any formal training in coaching. I've just done this ad hoc stuff in the UK. So I went and did the courses with Growth Coaching International. And they were inspirational for me. It really changed again how that I interacted. So it took it a step further, which I thought was really powerful. And Andrea Sherwood, who is the Director of Learning at Westminster, she said, oh my goodness me, I can see a difference again in how you're talking to people. And Andrea is actually one of our trained coaches now, and she's seen the same thing in her practice. So that's where it started. And what we had done, we'd not had a culture of open door classrooms and people observing lessons. So we started really slowly. So in 2019, I did like a lap of the school, and we're quite a big school. So I spent a year going round and observing every teacher within the school, which it was exhausting. So we'd have a pre-lesson observation conversation, ask the people what they wanted me to focus upon. And then I'd observe the lesson. And then after that, I would go back and we would do feedback meetings, which were supposed to be coaching conversations. But when I started those conversations around school, I realised that not everybody was in the coaching headset. It's not something that when you're asking people to reflect on practice, it takes practice to reflect on what you do in the classroom. So I started with giving people five great things that I'd seen and two things to think about, because lots of people, I'd say, how do you think that lesson went? And they go, oh, great.
Yes.
And that was it. And I was like, okay, so, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say, you know, is there anything that you would change? No, nothing had changed. So it was a very different place. So we did have some really reflective teachers within school, and they became our early adopters. So from that process, regardless of what I'd seen in the lesson, it allowed me to highlight who our reflective thinkers were in staff and who were our people that we could start making the moves forward. So that was probably the start in 2019. And from there, it's just sort of morphed and grown. And I think because Simon, our principal, he allows you and he's allowed me to run with the programme. So he's asked me where I want to go with it, because he appreciates that I'm the person who's working with people and I'm the one with the experience. So what we did, we went in 2022, at the beginning of 2022, we did another course run by Growth Coaching International in collaboration with the Independent Schools of South Australia, which was about instructional coaching. And we went to Brighton Grammar in Melbourne and we did some work with them. And that was that was game changing for us as a school. So from there, we were thinking, actually, the model that we've got is not sustainable. I can't keep going around. You know, we've got a school of nearly 1,300 kids. I can't keep going around and just observing lessons. I don't actually get anything done. So we wanted to train some more coaches, but we wanted to actually have a pedagogical playbook. So what were our beliefs as a school? What are the things that work for us? So myself and Andrea Sherwood, who is my counterpart, I'm the director of teaching and Andrea's the director of learning. We ran a group of sessions and we ran hundreds of them. I think we ran about eight in the end. So we wanted every teacher within school to have some input into what were our high impact teaching strategies. We wanted everything that we looked at to be backed by research, but we were very vague and said, what are the things that you do in your classroom that have the impact on your students? What are the things that make the difference? And from there, we got every staff member involved. We came up with the strategies. Everybody chatted and we did all these workshops. And we came up with our top, we call them Westminster's top 10 hits. And the key thing, we're a very relational school. The number one was relationships, so positive professional relationships with the kids. And then we've got differentiation, content linked to the real world. We've got a range of different things that are our hits, but they're all research-based, which is fantastic. And they're all linked to the Australian Professional Standards for Teachers and the different career stages in there. So from there, we had a playbook, so we knew exactly where we wanted to go. But because I'm a bit of a tech geek, I didn't want a static playbook. I decided that I wanted to be an ever-evolving resource because we're always changing and improving, and what we do is always getting better. So we built an intranet site called Pedagogy at West. From there, we've got checklists of how to do different strategies. And then we've got videos of our teachers with our students being filmed doing these, doing different strategies. And it's just there for the coaches to work with people that they're coaching, but also for people to just nip on and go, oh, my assessment for learning wasn't great. What are other people doing within school? As we're going around with the coaching program, it's ever-changing and evolving. So we're trying to get a range of different videos and checklists to go on Pedagogy at West. So it's constantly moving and evolving as the coaching program works. So I've sort of jumped a step, really, because I think that we came up with the top 10 hits. But while that was happening, I needed to get some buy-in, because me saying, oh, this is a great idea, we're going to start filming lessons, it's gone a step further from me coming in or the different people within school coming in and observing to you're going to film your lesson, you're going to watch it back with somebody else, and you're going to be coached around that. So I took a small group while we were doing the workshop. I took a small group of people that I have a lot of trust in me. And I said, guys, do you fancy getting involved in this and being our test case dummies? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. So they went away, they filmed the lessons. And the great thing about the filming of the lessons, they could watch it back and go, that's rubbish, I don't want to show anybody that. Film a different one.
Okay.
They could choose. So they could pick whatever they wanted to do. So rather than me saying, I'm free at this time, I'm coming in to observe, they could pick a class. Yeah. And people were saying, do I pick a class that's a great class, or do I pick a class that I'm actually struggling with? And it's up to you. What do you want me to see? What is the most useful thing for you? So people picked a range. We had people who picked and you could see that it was a model lesson, and then we had people who were really vulnerable and picked a class that they were really struggling with. But from that, rather than me giving the five great things and the two areas to think about, people set their own, and everybody was great at the things that they wanted to think about and were much harsher than I would ever be. But they really struggled with the five great things. So they found it really difficult to say, actually, I rocked that. People don't actually see things that is just ingrained in the practice. And I remember when I filled mine and I went through my lesson, it was actually with Andrea Sherwood. And she said, every time you talk, you say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other. She said, you always do that. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. She said, you've built this team environment. And I picked up lots of different things about other people that they were completely unaware that they did, but was just actually fantastic practice. So once we'd got the little group going, we got feedback from those people, we got quotes, got them to do, I'm a maths teacher, so I'm a little bit of a nerd, and I'd got them to do questionnaires. So they'd gone, how did you rank lesson observations? So they had a 5-star ranking. How do you rank video in your lessons in comparison? How has it changed your practice? So I had all these questions. So then when we launched to staff, everybody could see the improvement from our teachers. So it wasn't just me saying it, it was our early adopters. So we'd started with the people that we knew we'd get buy-in from. So that was really powerful.
It sounds amazing. And think of those two extremes. At the very start, I can just picture you running around all the different classrooms, you know, back in 2019, observing basically everybody in the school, right through to a stage where you have, you know, your own intranet set up and you've got actual lessons recorded for other folks to tap into. And I like that idea that, yes, some people are picking their best ever lessons, the inspection lessons, which is fine. And other folks who are picking lessons where they are taking a big risk and putting themselves out there. But at the same time, they're learning an awful lot about their own practice. And as you say, they're coming up with the things that they want to improve. And it is hard to come up with the things that you think, as you say, I really rock at that. So fantastic learning experience for all concerned. Angela, you lead what's called the Highly Accomplished and Lead Teacher Accreditation Program at Westminster, or HALT for short. And you presented recently at the HALT 2023 Summit in Melbourne. Firstly, can you explain to our listeners what HALT is all about?
Absolutely. Now, HALT is one of my passion projects. I would say it's something that I would absolutely love. What it is, it's a national program in Australia where you are nationally accredited by not people within your school, but external people. And it's based on different career stages. So when you finish uni, you would be at graduate career stage. When you move to full registration, you'd be proficient. But then there's two optional career stages. There's then highly accomplished teacher stage. And then finally, there's lead teacher stage. So you put together a portfolio of evidence, but it's all about how you have impacted on your students and your colleagues. So it's about having mass impact. So I think that's one of the things that is great about the HALT program. It's about showcasing our teachers who positively impact the students and the teachers. And John Hattie is a big advocate for HALT. So, and he talks about the difference between experience and expertise. And HALT is about showing your expertise as a teacher. And it is a really rigorous process. The stage one, which is your portfolio. And then the stage two, where the external people come in and they observe you teach, they meet with the students, they meet with your colleagues. It's really rigorous. To be accredited is a massive, it's a massive undertaking, but it shows that you're in the top percentiles of teachers within the country. And it allows our great teachers to stay in the classroom. So rather than looking for promotion opportunities, it's a different career path. So, but if you are wanting to go and get promoted, HALT is a great way to be able to showcase what you can do.
Yeah. But fantastic having staff, you know, in your school who have a real thirst for that. And, you know, that's a direction that they want to go. And then for you in your position, you know, with HALT teachers, you know, you're able to give a lot of advice and I suppose guide people within Westminster, which is just terrific. During that presentation at the HALT Summit, you used an interesting phrase, Angela. You talked about, and I quote, the coalition of the willing. Coaching is a precious in-demand resource. Don't fret about those who have not opted in yet. Can I ask you to unpack that a little bit for our listeners?
Yes, I certainly can. Now, we train 16 coaches. We've got 13 coaches who are active at the moment because obviously life gets in the way. So coaching is coaching is a really in-demand resource, which is great, and I love that. But we have got people who have opted into coaching because they think they should, and actually don't want to. They don't want to be coached. They just want to tick the box to say, "Oh, I've been coached," and and I think that that is a problem. And then we've got people who are saying, "Yes, you know, we got people to opt in at the beginning of the year, and they were saying, "Yes, I'd really like to be coached in term two," and we gave people an option of who they were coached by, when they were, when they wanted to be coached based on their needs. And things change. So people who said, actually, I want to be coached in term two, when we've contacted them, when the coach gets in touch, it's tumbleweed moment. So they don't respond. And we want to make sure that we're coaching people who are ready to be coached, because you've got to be in the right mindset to be coached. And time is really precious. So we're working with the people who want to do it. And when we've got people who are saying, actually, I've got too much on my plate, we go, that's absolutely fine. Get back in touch when you're ready to jump back into the program, and we move on to the next person. Yeah. Because when you've got the staff the size of ours, and we've only got 13 coaches who are active at the moment, but, and I'm saying only because 13 is a massive number of coaches. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We've only got a certain amount of time. We want to work with the people who really want to work with us. And we want it to be a positive experience for the people being coached. And my big believer is, if it's a waste of people's time, it's not great for our program, because they're not going to go into the staff room and talk about, I've had a brilliant coaching session. So we're not selling the coaching. The people that we coach are selling the coaching to everybody else. So if they're not wanting to be coached yet, we're hoping that we'll win them over by the positivity around the program. So we don't want anybody to feel under any pressure to jump in and be coached if it's not the right time for them.
I love the way you're throwing your growth mindset phrase in there, Angela, when you say you're not ready to be coached yet, which is really important. And I suppose it's about trying to encourage people to generate, you know, a bit of an interest in it, you know. And okay, maybe from a distance initially, let other folks go first, and then maybe those people will come around, you know, later in the school year, or maybe even at the year two or year three. Another phrase you used, Angela, and I love this one, is it's not all a bed of roses. And I'd imagine that, okay, the HALT Summit, it's a great opportunity to celebrate stories of great success, and that's very important. But we'd really appreciate your thoughts on the challenges of implementing a coaching program in a school. So with any bunch of roses, there are going to be many thorns. How do you handle those?
I think we're just really, really honest about the issues that we're having. So coaches have got too much on. We've got a coach who just an amazing coach, but he's taken on a new role as head of ag, and he just said, I can't do anything term one. And I was like, not a problem. And it was just, it's a bit too much. Then we've got a new farm being built at the moment, and he was like, Ange, I'm really sorry, I've got too much on. And I'm like, not a problem. So I think we've got to work with where people are at that stage. So making sure that we've got time for our coaches, and it's because we're an ELC, so Early Learning Centre to Year 12 school, it's actually easier to give the senior school teachers who are coaches time, because we can manipulate that a little bit based on the classes. It's harder to give our primary colleagues time because they're with a class.
Yeah.
So that's been a challenge, and we don't want any of our coaches to feel that there's a difference. So we've had to work around that. That's been a really difficult workaround, and we haven't got it right, and we're still working on it. So we've got things like that going on. We've got a lack of understanding from some members of staff about what coaching is, and that's been difficult. So we've got people who, and we've been really clear, you're not allowed to be coached by anybody who's your line manager. It's completely separate from performance management.
Okay.
But also, you're not allowed to be coached by one of your mates, because that's not helpful either. And we've had people opting in, and because we gave the coach the coachees choices, so they could choose up to five coaches or say, I'll have anybody. We did have people who were picking people that they thought would be easy on them or that they're friendly with. But the coaches also have a choice and say, no, I'm actually not comfortable to work with that person. So managing that has been a little bit difficult at times. And I'm quite happy to be the big bad wolf and say, oh, I'm really sorry, you can't work with that person at the moment. And I'm happy to take the flak and go, you know, they're a precious resource. And at this stage, they're working with these people. So you've got a choice of these others. So that's been a little bit of a challenge. But I think the biggest one is people having time for catching up. And schools are just really busy places, and we don't want to waste anybody's time. We want it to be purposeful. So as soon as people feel that they're ready to move on, that's absolutely great. And we don't want to tie it too tight either. So because it is instructional coaching, and we're focusing on what people wanted to do in the classroom, and one of our curriculum leaders, who is an exceptional practitioner, she was coming in and she was talking to one of our coaches about what was going on in the classroom. And the coach said, is this actually what you want to talk to me about? And she was like, not really. She was like, I actually am having a massive issue with a couple of people in my faculty, and I really want to go through that. So we want to break it down that it doesn't actually need to be about the classroom practice. It can be about other areas. And it's just getting the understanding there. So we've not got everything right, but we're just working towards it.
Absolutely. But I mean, listeners, they genuinely will appreciate, you know, your honesty, you know, and it's great to hear about all the things that are going really well. But I love the fact, Angela, you use that phrase, even going through those issues, we still haven't got it right yet, and we're still working on it. And that's what, you know, implementing a coaching culture is all about. It's an ongoing learning experience, which is really helpful to the folks who are listening. The Westminster School coaching story is going to span across two podcast episodes, which is great. So to bring this first part to a close, what would your advice be to, say, a senior leadership team in a school that is at the very start of their coaching journey? What would be the most important first steps that they could take to get the ball rolling, Angela?
I think the key thing is picking the right human beings. It's about having the right person or the right people involved, and the right people are not always the people that you expect them to be. So our key criteria for people that are coaches or people involved in the program is making sure they've got the coach's way of being, they're highly regarded by the staff and the kids. That's really important. And for us, that they need to be excellent in the classroom. So we wanted people who were already working at a high, not necessarily accredited, but working at a highly accomplished or lead level. So when they're working with people, they're not confirming bad practice. So they were our key things. But it goes a step further, I think, than just picking the right people as your coaches. You want to pick the right group of people who are going to be your first group through to be coached, because they're the ones who are going to sell the program. So picking the right humans, that's my number one takeaway.
I think that's really useful. And as you say, and you clarified it there, picking the right human beings as the coaches, but also picking the right human beings as the coachees is equally important. Angela, many thanks for giving us a really good taste of what coaching is like at Westminster School. I'm confident that our listeners will have been inspired by what you've shared with us today. And as I mentioned at the start of this episode, this is a double header. And in the next episode, Angela and I will continue the conversation, joined by another of Westminster's highly accomplished lead teachers, Ali Barr. So I look forward to joining you all again in the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.